giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brits Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donick. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Brits Insiders 102.5 The Game, Adam Vingan alongside Willie Donick. The Predators season opener is fast approaching. 1 week from tomorrow, the Predators open the regular season at Bridgestone Arena against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Willie, it's October. That always gets me very excited. When October 1st rolls around, you know there's going to be meaningful hockey games played. No disrespect to the preseason, which is still ongoing. But we have meaningful hockey around the league in just a matter of days. Very excited about it.
I'm excited. This is my favorite month of the year when it comes to sports. And the baseball playoffs are going. Hockey's cranking up. I am one happy camper for sure. And the Predators are making moves. There's a lot going on. So there's a lot to discuss.
And that is what we intend to do with you over the next hour. The Predators training camp roster has been trimmed to 28 players, 16 forwards, 10 defensemen, and of course, two goaltenders. The Predators and the other 31 teams in the NHL have until Monday at 4 p.m. Central to submit their opening day rosters. And the Predators made some news today. First, some bad news. Matthew Wood, who was having a standout preseason, suffered an injury in the Gold Star Showcase last week and is week to week with, if I recall off the top of my head, a lower body injury. So Matthew Wood, week to week with a lower body injury. He joins Nick Hague on the shelf for the Predators before the start of the regular season. The Predators also made a waiver claim today. They claimed Tyson Jost off waivers from the Carolina Hurricanes. Predators fans, you may be familiar with that name. Tyson Jost began his NHL career playing for the Colorado Avalanche. He has since bounced around the league. The Predators, assuming he gets into a game with the Predators, would be his fifth NHL team in 10 years. Spent parts of six seasons with Colorado, two with Buffalo, two with Minnesota, and one with Carolina. So, Willie, your thoughts on the injury to Matthew Wood and the acquisition via waivers of Tyson Jost?
I think they are a little bit unrelated. But certainly the injury to Wood, who was pushing to make the team, I think when we discussed last week, he was the guy probably opening the most eyes or among the three young players that were making the best impression. And I would put Reed Schaefer in there along with Brady Martin, who is, of course, always going to have a lot of eyes on him. But Wood being out week to week gives them some roster flexibility along with Nick Hague at the beginning of the season. But we also discussed throughout the summer that if you looked at their center position, and let's just take it, for example, their lineup over the last couple of years would include guys like Colton Sissons and Mark Jankowski, those utility guys that can play center and play wing, and they lacked that. They had virtually zero depth at center. So you knew at some point they were going to need somebody. And Tyson Jost is, I guess, a somebody. He's a journeyman. Once upon a time, he was the 10th pick in the draft. Once again, proving that just because you pick 10th doesn't mean you're going to get a great player every year. But he's a steady guy who could play center and wing. And I would guess an upgrade over Dylan Gambrell, who was sort of that guy on the roster. So Jost might get a chance to play if he can come in and play his best. He can maybe help the bottom of the lineup and give them a little bit of roster flexibility. And it does also focus in on what are they going to do with Brady Martin.
Tyson Jost has played 495 NHL games. He has 149 career points, 61 goals, 88 assists. His career high in points is 26, set in 2018-19 with the Colorado Avalanche. His career high in goals is 12 in 17-18 with the Colorado Avalanche. So we'll see where Tyson Jost fits in to the Predators' plans. But as for practice earlier today, Willie, you mentioned Brady Martin. According to Intrepid reporter Max Herz, Brady Martin skated on the right wing of the top line at practice today with Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly. So left to right, Forsberg, O'Reilly, Martin. The second line, Steven Stamkos, Fedor Svechkov, and Joachim Kemmel. Third line, Michael Bunting, Erik Haula, Jonathan Marchessault. And the fourth line, Cole Smith. I assume it's Ozzie Weisblatt. There are a lot of Weisblatts running around the Predators organization. So Ozzie Weisblatt
and
Zach LaRue.
Well, his brother always has been sent down. So okay. Ozzie is the lone Weisblatt remaining.
Well, Weisblatt is filling in for Michael McCarron, who missed practice today as he and his wife await the birth of their second child. So congratulations to the McCarron family. But Martin on the Martin on the right wing of the top line, that's intriguing to me. We've talked a lot about what the Predators could do with Brady Martin. We've talked about him playing down the middle because, one, that's the position we know him to play. And two, as we also just mentioned, the Predators' center depth is iffy. That's one word to describe it. So what do you make of Brady Martin potentially not only starting the season with the Predators, but if these practice lines are any indication, he could start playing on the wing on the top line?
Well, remember, Brady Martin can only play 9 games.
Correct.
Unless they intend to keep him for the whole year, which I still, as much as he's impressed, I still would be hesitant to commit to him for a full year right now. Is that the best thing for him? They have to be thinking long-term and not just this year. But, you know, he's played well. To his credit, he's definitely... he's getting a look there for a reason. And one of the reasons is that Matthew Wood is hurt. Matthew Wood was probably in line to maybe take that spot before he got hurt. Reed Schaefer has played great, but I'm not sure he's a guy that you play on the top line. But you see the theme in here. You see the theme of young legs with the veterans and Stamkos, Marchessault, Forsberg spread out on 3 different lines. And not on the same line, which is where they played together for a lot of last year with some success, but some limitations for sure. So they want to try to create balance in the top 9. And of course, there's the elephant in the room, the obvious guy who would be in that mix probably had he been here from the start of camp is Luke Evangelista. And so he would be a logical guy you could put on that line with Forsberg, O'Reilly if he were to sign today, which as we record this, he is not done.
So we'll see when this airs if that has changed. I'm looking into the future, and I'm going to say no. As you hear this, I don't think Luke Evangelista is going to be under contract. But as I said, and we'll get to Luke Evangelista in the next segment. But as I said, the Predators have, and the rest of the NHL, the Predators have until 4 p.m. Central Monday to submit their opening day roster. That is when those rosters are due. 4 p.m. Central on Monday. And I'm intrigued by the remaining roster battles on the defensive end. So back to Max Herz for a moment. Here were the defense pairs at practice today. Adam Willsby with Roman Josi. Willsby moving up there with the injury to Nick Hegg. Brady Shea with Nick Perbix. Spencer Stastny with Justin Barron, and Andreas Englund with Nick Blankenberg, with Tanner Molendijk rotating in. So, Willie, when you look at the bottom of that defensive depth chart, Stastny, Barron, Englund, Blankenberg, Molendijk, a lot of interesting depth pieces there. How do you envision this shaking out ahead of the roster submission deadline?
I think right now, the top 3 pairs that they have probably are penciled in for game number 1, or at least the game on Saturday, which is probably a dress rehearsal, for lack of a better term. Willsby looks like he's earned the chance to play with Josi because of the absence of Nick Hague. Shea and Perbix have been together virtually since the start of camp, a lefty and a righty, and finding the right guy with Brady Shea to bring out the best in Brady Shea is an essential piece to the puzzle here of are they going to improve and have a chance to stay in the playoff mix, the wild card mix? And then Spencer Stastny, I think, has moved up. I think he was very much on the outside looking in coming into camp, but I think he's shown a little bit more. And there was a much publicized interview he did with Elliot Friedman, a guy that we enjoy talking to every Thursday on DVD, and we're going to do that again this season. He's, I think, feeling better about himself, his mental well-being, and there's never been any question about his skating. It's just getting out there, getting the reps, and playing with confidence. So he's got the talent. There's no doubt. He's flashed that to be a viable NHL piece, and I think Justin Barron has played well. In listening to Andrew Burnett, they like where Justin Barron has gone with his game. So that's another lefty-righty combo that looks like it could be a steady third pair for them. And hopefully that could give them a little bit more mileage than what they've had. Because remember, they played 15 defensemen. The guy that last year, it seems to be the odd man out is Blankenberg, who was a nice story last year, but it seems like they are hesitant to have him be one of the top six at this point because he seems to get that role on that 7-8 pair. England, I think, came in as a number 7-8 type of guy, a serviceable, stay-at-home guy that's a little bigger, that gives you some size. I don't think he's the guy you want in there every night, ideally, but he's a nice guy to have for depth.
I'm intrigued by the pair, quickly. I'm intrigued by the pair of Brady Shea and Nick Perbix.
That's the key to the whole thing, I think, other than the obvious, can Roman Josi be Roman Josi?
Yes. Brady Shea had a difficult time adjusting from Carolina to Nashville last season. And I like Nick Perbix's game. I think it will complement Brady Shea's game well. So I am intrigued by how that pair performs once the regular season starts. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we are still awaiting, at least as we record this, we are still awaiting the signing of Luke Evangelista. And I did some research last night in an attempt to figure out what Luke Evangelista could be looking for in his next contract. We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, this is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you on a Wednesday evening. Willie teased this in the previous segment, but Predators fans, some programming notes for you. Our weekly interviews with Predators GM Barry Trotz and Sportsnet insider Elliot Friedman will start next week. We will have Barry Trotz on the program Tuesdays at 5 on DVD. We will have Elliot Friedman Thursdays at 5 on DVD. So you will get your hockey fix with both Barry Trotz and Elliot Friedman starting next week on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Always looking forward to chatting with Barry Trotz and Elliot Friedman. And Willie, I wonder if we'll be able to talk to Barry Trotz about a Luke Evangelista contract when we have him on the air at 5 o'clock next Tuesday on DVD. We shall see. He remains unsigned. Earlier today, the New Jersey Devils re-signed RFA defenseman Luke Hughes to a 7-year, $63 million contract. 7 years with a cap hit of $9 million. That leaves Luke Evangelista as the highest profile unsigned restricted free agent in the NHL. And we've talked about this on this show. We've talked about it on DVD. You and I are having a hard time, and I don't think we're alone, in grasping the issue here. So here's what I tried to do yesterday. I went to puckpedia.com, which is an excellent resource, and just searched for players in Luke Evangelista's position, not just his actual position, meaning forward or winger specifically, but his age, games played, all of those things, to get a sense of what Luke Evangelista could be looking for in a contract. And what I deciphered was that my gut tells me that Luke Evangelista is searching for a contract with a cap hit somewhere between $3.5 and $4 million. And here are some recent contracts signed by players to give you some comparables. Will Cooley with the New York Rangers recently signed a 2-year deal with a $3.9 million cap hit. He was 23 at signing, 33 goals, 66 points in 167 games. Tyson Forster with the Philadelphia Flyers, also 23 at signing, signed a 2-year contract with a $3.75 million cap hit, 48 goals, 83 points in 166 games. We've mentioned Jack Quinn of the Buffalo Sabres, 23 at signing, 2 years, $3.375 million, 39 goals, 97 points in 178 games. Luke Evangelista, of course, is 23 years old. He has 33 goals and 86 points in 172 career games. So just based on some of those other players, my gut tells me that Evangelista is looking for something between $3.5 and $4 million. Do you like the players that I pulled? Do you think that is a reasonable expectation of what Luke Evangelista could be looking for in a contract?
I don't think there's any question that those are guys that would be peers and on some level comparables to Luke Evangelista. And so, therefore, I think any good agent would say, here are some guys that we think are similar. This is always, to me, the tricky part, is you've got some variables here, but it's so easy to, on a social media or an article that's written or a talk show when we talk about it, just simplify everything and say, here are the goals, here are the assists, here are the games played. They all are the same age, so they should all slot this way. So that, to me, is very reasonable negotiating, if that's the thing. I saw a tweet from Frank Cervelli that basically said, let's just get it over with, 2 years times $3 million, and then we should have a deal.
I saw that tweet as well.
Yeah, and so that, to me, seems more in the ballpark. Because as I look at those other guys, right, in particular, Cooley and Forster, those guys are coming off of years where they each had over 20 goals.
Mm-hmm.
They had grown from 2 years ago to last year. Their arc of their career is moving up, where I think it's very clear, and I think Luke Evangelista, if he were sitting here, would say that it was a rough year for him last year. He took a step back. Injury had something to do with it. His surrounding cast had something to do with it. But the Flyers and the Rangers didn't have great years either. And Will Cooley had 20 goals and 25 assists last year. He's coming off of a year where he took a jump at age 22. So I think it was probably a little easier for the Rangers to commit. What did he get, 3.9, you said?
2 years with a $3.9 million cap hit.
And then Tyson Forster.
2 years, $3.75 million cap hit.
And he had 25 goals last year. The saying that Elliot Friedman always says is, goal scorers get paid. You pay for goals. You pay extra for goals. So Luke Evangelista, who went from 16 goals down to 10 last year, and he played 12 less games. And as we mentioned, he had a good finish at the end of the year that made the stats look better. But for a three quarters of the year, he was really down in his production. So I'm seeing both sides of this. I do not want to. I am a huge Luke Evangelista fan, and we just got done talking about the Predators lineup. They can use Luke Evangelista somewhere in there in the top nine. They know that. Luke Evangelista's camp definitely knows that, because as much as they are excited about young players, one of them's hurt right now in Matthew Wood, but even if Matthew Wood were healthy, I don't know that it's time to tell everybody Matt Wood is ready to play 82 games. Luke Evangelista has gone through the growth process. He's older. He should be more ready for that grind. So he is needed on this roster. All that being said, I would slot him slightly under all three of those comparables.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest reason is he's coming off a tough year compared to those other three guys, in particular Cooley and Forster.
And they are
over 20. They had 20 and 25 goals respectively.
And they're different players, right? They approach the game differently. Will Cooley plays a different game than Luke Evangelista.
No question about it.
So,
and that's a factor too.
You do have to factor that in as well. By the way, Tyson Jost claimed on waivers from the Carolina Hurricanes earlier today, carries a cap hit of $775,000. He's under contract through the end of this season. So basically a league minimum player for the Predators.
Right. So Jost, I don't think affects Evangelista.
Right.
I think Jost is the type of utility player that I think you like to have on the roster, because if a guy gets banged up, you can slide him at wing, you can slide him at center. He's been around the league, and they have flexibility with Schaefer and Wood and Kimmel to send them up and down to Milwaukee to get them the ice time that they need to continue developing. Or if anybody grabs that spot, they can play. Same thing with Brady Martin, but Brady Martin is different. They have to send him back to junior. So he would have to take up a roster spot and then send him back. So here are two other things on the Evangelista thing. Adam, I want to bounce off of you.
Sure.
A, the cap has gone way up in 1 year.
Yes.
Right? Don't you think the league-wide, there's a lot of different philosophies of what to do with that. Like Kirill Kaprizov and the elite guys, there's no question they're going to another level of pay. And the teams, I think, are going to jump in there and lock guys like that up.
And we'll talk about Kaprizov at the end of the show.
And I think the guys like Tyson Jost, who are utility placeholders, role players, those guys aren't going to change a lot in their value, right? Those guys are always going to make league minimum or just over that.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that are hard to gauge are the guys like Evangelista.
Yes.
Because you don't want to overpay for a guy that ends up, because you're trying to commit to Luke Evangelista for 2 years. He's coming off a bad year. And he, in 2 years, will be a restricted free agent. And to qualify him, you've got to give him a 10% raise of what you pay him today. And we don't know what he's going to do for the next 2 years. I can see him, if he doesn't get better, being a guy in 2 years, you're like, do you want him? Do you not? I could also see his game growing if he bets on himself, and then he'll be in line for a big raise at that point. He will be restricted at the end of 2 years, right?
I believe that is true.
Because he's not even eligible for arbitration mm-hmm. at this point. So I think you're trying to look ahead and you're saying, what does Kimmel look like in 2 years? What does Wood look like in 2 years? What does Schaefer look like in 2 years? Where's Igor Surin at that point? Where are some of these other guys looking at that point? So there's a lot of things to consider that Barry Trotz has as he's looking ahead. And it's not just how many goals, how many assists, how many points does each of these guys have in the last 2 years.
Whenever we talk about the rising salary cap and how that will affect player salaries, I'm reminded of a quote from Blue Jackets GM Don Waddell shortly before free agency. A friend of the station, Greg Wyshynski, tweeted this out back in June from Waddell. Quote, "I've been educated," in quotes, "I've been educated by every agent I talk to. Just because the player was worth $3 million last year doesn't mean he's now worth $4 million because the cap went up." And I agree with Waddell, and I think players like Evangelista, to your point, Willie, fall in that category of the cap's rising, they're worth a little bit more. So this will be really interesting to monitor. I was certain that he would be signed on the first day of training camp. I'm surprised it's gotten to this point, especially because the two high-profile restricted free agents that were recently re-signed, Mason McTavish and Luke Hughes, both of whom signed longer-term deals. Hughes got 7 years. McTavish got 6 years. Those were long-term deals. Those two players are key parts of their respective teams' futures.
High first-round picks with high ceilings.
Evangelista,
who have done quite a bit to show that they're going to get there.
Right. Evangelista is not in that same category, which is why this is so surprising to me. It's going to be a two-year contract. Like, that's why it's shocking to me that it still hasn't been resolved. But we shall see.
So you and I asked quickly, when we have gauged this in the summer, when we knew this was not done yet, and we were like, what's going on there? And then even as recent as last week, we put the value of him around $2.5 million.
Yes.
You can see what the comparables are, more like $3.4 to $3.9, maybe just under that. So I can see Cervelli's thing saying, let's just stop arguing and give him three. I think the value between 2.5 and three is really the sweet spot, but that's where they are right now. Hopefully they're going to close that gap soon.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, a lot of Predators players are looking for bounce back seasons. We will focus on one in particular, number 91, Steven Stamkos. We'll discuss that coming up next. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan alongside Willie Donick on a Wednesday evening. We hope you are having a wonderful Wednesday evening as well. The Nashville Predators open the regular season a week from tomorrow against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Puck drop at 7, a game you can hear, of course, right here on 102.5 The Game. If I'm not mistaken, Willie, the NHL regular season kicks off on Tuesday with a triple header. Blackhawks at Panthers, Penguins at Rangers, which is interesting because, of course, Mike Sullivan, now the head coach of the New York Rangers, and Avalanche at Kings. So a triple header on Tuesday if you're looking to get your hockey fix early next week. The Predators open the regular season on Thursday. And when the Predators open the regular season on Thursday, a lot of Predators players are going to be looking for bounce back seasons. And we are going to focus at the moment on one Steven Stamkos. Because remember, at this time a year ago, Steven Stamkos was getting ready for his first season outside of Tampa Bay. You all remember how excited you felt on July 1st, 2024, when the Predators signed Stamkos, among others. And it just did not work out for Steven Stamkos last season, his first season with the Predators. Stamkos averaged 0.33 goals per game, the second lowest total of his 17-year career, and a career-worst 2.12 shots per game. So you could certainly argue that last season was the worst season of Steven Stamkos' soon-to-be Hall of Fame career. Because we all know when Steven Stamkos retires, he will be in the Hall of Fame. So, Willie, I'm curious what your expectations are for Steven Stamkos this season. He scored 27 goals last season, had 53 points. He played in all 82 games. 14 of his 27 goals came on the power play. Played a lot of center last season, which was not the expectation. But he, Philip Forsberg, and Jonathan Marchessault played more than 300 minutes at even strength. They had some good chemistry. But I know the Predators would prefer Steven Stamkos not to have to play center for long stretches. It appears he will open the season at left wing on the line with Fedor Svechkov as his center. So we'll touch on all of these things. But when you look at the season Steven Stamkos had last season, how confident are you that he can get back to being the Steven Stamkos who scored 40 goals the season before he left Tampa Bay for Nashville?
This is a complex question that you're asking, and it's a good one because it's going to have a lot to do with how the team does, because we're under the umbrella of everybody had a bad year last year with only a couple of exceptions. Every single guy on the Predators roster had a bad year based on their expectations. But Steven Stamkos is going to be 35. So is he ever going to, first of all, I would love to have had my worst season with 27 goals and 27 assists or 26 assists.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad worst season, which shows you how great he's been. Now, the one thing he was last year was reliable. He was there for 82 games.
Yes.
You could argue some of the other seasons could have been, quote, worse because he wasn't there.
Right.
He missed half seasons or, you know, parts of seasons with, he's had not a lot of injuries, but he's had a couple of big injuries that short-circuited, you know, a couple of seasons.
He was one of
way back.
He was one of three Predators players to appear in all 82 games last season. Brady Shea, Philip Forsberg, the others.
So to answer your question, number one, I think they feel like he can be more effective on the wing if he's not burdened with playing center at this stage of his career. The other thing I'm noticing is what they would like to do is, and this is where Fedor Svechkov is a very, very important part of this equation. But Steven Stamkos sort of sheltering Svechkov in the faceoff circle. If you look at the games that they play, Svechkov can take some of the faceoffs, but he's a young centerman. He's not a great faceoff ace. You've got Stamkos, who is a wily vet in the faceoff circle, has taken a million in his career. So he can help. He can be a quasi-center without the full duties of the center. So that is why you see that tandem a lot. I actually thought that Erik Haula might be that guy for Svechkov, but Haula has got to play center. He's a utility guy, really, but he has to play center on this team because they're so thin at that position, which is the number one weakness on the team, hands down. So how does Stamkos maybe get a bump back into that 30-something? I don't know if it's realistic to think he's going to score 40 again.
Yeah.
But I think if they can improve their power play, I think he can. He only had, as I'm looking, 7 power play goals last season out of his 27 overall. The 3 previous years, he had 20, 21, and 20. He is a prolific guy on the power play. And the power play was not bad last year.
Quickly, just to correct, he had 14 power play goals last season. 14 out of 27 on the power play.
You're right. I'm looking at the wrong thing. What am I looking at? Oh, I'm looking at power play assists.
Okay.
Okay. So
14 power
16,
play goals.
14, 19 the previous year. So scratch what I said there before. But I do think
that's why I'm here.
A lot of the games that I saw last year, he was open for the one-timer. And the power play wasn't bad last year. The 5-on-5 was a much bigger problem for the Predators than the power play. It was an average power play. And if you really look historically, it was actually one of the better power plays the Predators have had. It's just that in this day and age, the average power play is better than it was in 2005 or 2010.
And I have some numbers on that. Steven Stamkos attempted 69 one-timers on the power play, scored 6 goals.
And I think that number could go up. If you can deliver the pass better, there were so many plays where I thought he's ready. There is anticipation. This is one of the greatest who's ever played at that particular shot. Set up in the left circle, opened up for the one-timer, and the pass was just off, and he had to kick it back out. Or he had to, you know, tee it up before he shot it. And timing is everything. If you can deliver the puck to the pocket, and there was nobody better than guys like Kucherov and Hedman.
That's where I was going with it. Yep.
With the Lightning. The Predators haven't found that. That would be one way to get more out of Steven Stamkos. But I'm trying to be realistic of what you can get out of him at this stage, 5-on-5, based on who he's going to be playing with. I'm not setting my bar really high for him at this stage of his career to be a guy that carries the load.
Yes.
He is who he is at this point.
My concern when the Predators signed Steven Stamkos was, to use a term that I've used to describe Luke Evangelista lately, Steven Stamkos isn't much of a needle mover at 5-on-5 anymore. And he was coming off playing with Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point, who are absolutely needle movers. Two of the best, I would say, in the NHL. So I thought the talent of his line mates is going to diminish moving from Tampa Bay to Nashville. And I think we saw that, and I think we saw Steven Stamkos affected by that, particularly at 5-on-5. I had no issues with him on the power play. He was going to get his goals, as you mentioned, that one-timer from the left circle, one of the best in the modern era of the NHL. I wasn't concerned about that. I was concerned more about 5-on-5. And I'm wondering if he starts the season with Fedor Svechkov, who has a lot to prove, and Joachim Kemmel, who's a youngster trying to make his way in the NHL. Are those problems going to persist with those two inexperienced line mates? Last season, he played more center than the Predators anticipated, but he did seem to find some rejuvenation playing down the middle with Philip Forsberg and Jonathan Marchessault. I thought they really clicked, but ideally, he's not playing there. So I still have the same questions about Stamkos playing on a line with two inexperienced line mates.
And I think we've watched enough hockey to know that regardless of what team you're talking about, how they start with the line combinations is just what you've seen from camp, it could be completely different.
Yes.
1 week into the season. Mm-hmm. And I think there will be some shuffling that is done. I think they really would like to take a look and see, can they blend the youth with the veterans? But in doing so, it's hopefully going to get you a better collective. I don't think it's going to bring out prolific five-on-five play from Steven Stamkos. I think, regardless of where they use him, I think we have to be realistic in what he is at this point. But the overall five-on-five game is critical, and I think it starts in the defensive end. I think one of the ways they want to get better is to be better defensively, and hopefully offensively they get more puck luck and they convert on more of the chances that they do get. But bouncing, if you're a fantasy player and you think Stamkos could get back to 40 goals, I'd be pretty skeptical of that. But I do think he could have a really good year if he can get a few more shots off. Because if you look at his shooting percentage, it's pretty consistent year in and year out. He doesn't take bad shots. I think there are certain volume shooters. Ovechkin comes to mind. He takes a ton of shots, and obviously he scored more goals than anybody else, so it's working. But when you're playing against him, you better be ready because he's going to shoot it 10, 12 times. He leads the league in shots almost every year.
Yes.
Stamkos is a little more selective. So there's nights where he has three shots, but he has, you know, two really good looks and one goal, so to speak. But I do think if they can get him the puck more where he can shoot, that's going to mean good things because he is a great shooter, always will be. He can be out there when he's 50 and be able to score from the circle, I think. But it's getting them the puck in the right spot.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, a division rival of the Nashville Predators made NHL history yesterday for doing something. We'll see if it's crazy, but the numbers are eye-popping. We will get to that coming up next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, this is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you on a Wednesday evening. The Predators open the regular season a week from tomorrow, October 9th, at home against the Columbus Blue Jackets with a 7 o'clock puck drop. Of course, all coverage right here on your home for Smashville, 102.5 The Game. Willie, yesterday, the Minnesota Wild, they gave Kirill Kaprizov the bag. All the bags, not just one bag, all the bags. An 8-year, 136, yes, you heard me right, $136 million contract, a $17 million annual average value. This is the richest contract in terms of both total money and average annual value in the history of the National Hockey League. In terms of total value, Kirill Kaprizov's $136 million deal overtakes Alex Ovechkin's $124 million deal, which was signed at a different time when you could sign players to contracts for however long you wanted. I believe Ovechkin's contract was 13 years, if I'm not mistaken, on that contract. In terms of cap hit, $17 million overtakes Leon Draisaitl at $14 million. So Kirill Kaprizov has been incredibly productive since he entered the NHL. He's averaged 1.21 points per game since 2020, which is 10th in the league over that span. He was having an MVP caliber season last season, had 50 points in the first 34 games, or his first 34 games, before suffering an injury. He played in only 7 more regular season games, but had 9 points in 6 playoff games for the Wild. So, I'm shocked. Just reading that number, 8 years, $136 million, $17 million per year. That's crazy. I mean, compared to other sports, Willie, this is nothing. NBA players, Major League Baseball players, NFL players, they get way more than this. But in the NHL, this is an unprecedented contract. What was your initial reaction to hearing this news?
I think it was pretty evident that he was going to get that money from somebody. If it wasn't Minnesota, it would be somebody else. And Minnesota, because they are the team that has him, could offer the extra year. So that always, just like with Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi and situations where the Predators were trying to sign their guy to the next big deal, UC Soros would be in there. It's always an advantage because you can do what no other team in the league can do, which is, I think, a nice little nuance in the salary cap that can help you keep your best players. But I think Kaprizov did a pretty good job when he turned down the $16 million per year by saying, keep coming back to me, because if I go, somebody's going to offer me closer to 20. And I think that is why we mentioned this earlier with Evangelista, the changing times where the price of doing business is going to get higher. Luke Hughes is a defenseman. He's going to make $9 million before he really proves what he can do. They think he's going to be worth that someday, but they're projecting. Kaprizov, he'll be worth the $17 million if he does what he's done. He is a prolific player that they cannot live without. He's a game changer. The only question is he going to stay healthy? Is he going to keep his head on straight? And can they put the right pieces around him with him making a higher percentage of the cap? But Bill Guerin, I'm sure, is sitting there going, huh, this is no problem. I've been paying, I don't know what the dead cap figure was on Suter and Parisi for all those years, but it was like $12 or $14 million in the hole to
start. They were
start
in salary cap hell for several years.
For several years when they bought those out. So they're free of that now.
Yes.
So they had the extra money to spend, and they do have some good young players that they have found in the meantime. So they're going to be good. So I didn't have any problem. I think you just kind of knew. And I think in the coming years, the intriguing thing will be that next group of players, starting with Connor McDavid, but Kyle Connor and Austin Matthews. There's a bunch of high-end players that are nearing the next contract, but I think we're going to find that they're all going to get in that neighborhood. So the sticker shock of seeing a guy making $17 million, he's the highest-paid player today. I don't think he'll be the highest-paid player by far in 2 years, because the price of the elite players is going to go way up.
Something you mentioned about the rising salary cap and player retention. There was this thought that when the NHL announced that the salary cap was going to rise significantly over the next several years, that it would lead to a lot of spending and player movement. But instead, what it really has done has empowered teams to retain players. So I'm curious how that plays out. You mentioned Kyle Connor. He has to be licking
salivating
his chops,
yes,
after seeing this contract, because he, like Kirill Kaprizov, is a winger who scores goals. And I'm curious what that contract's going to look like. Connor McDavid still needs a contract. I think Jack Eichel is in the group that you were talking about.
No question about it. And he's a center, so
right,
there's an added value of being the true number one center.
Like, also, how do you feel if you're like Mikko Rantanen or Mitch Marner right now? They signed their high-scoring wingers, and they're looking at $17 million. Both of them could have easily gotten $17 million, don't you think?
Maybe. Probably, right? If they went to the open market, but they chose to sign.
I think they're both at $12 million per season.
Right, but Rantanen, he waited, and then he was coaxed into it to sign with Dallas. He could have wrote it out, and he could have been in this boat. So maybe, I don't know if he's regretting that he did what he did, or he's happy that he took the security when it did. The negotiations are an interesting part of it. I'm fascinated with what McDavid would do. McDavid has the ability. There's nobody with more leverage in the sport than he does. He could easily be the LeBron James and just take it all the way through this year and then have I'm going to take my talents to X and name your price. If he wanted to, I don't think that's what he's about. I think he's about, where can I win? Which I think LeBron had a big part of that too, and he happened to be going to a team he knew was loaded up and positioned to win. And maybe it's easier to gauge that in basketball, where there are less players that you need, whereas in hockey, you need all of these things. So if McDavid signs, which a lot of people speculate he'll sign a short-term deal, mm-hmm, for big money with Edmonton and play it out a little bit more, he's not utilizing he's doing it out of loyalty,
yeah,
more than where is the best place where I can win.
Speaking of the Oilers quickly, the Edmonton Oilers made an interesting transaction today. They acquired former Predators goaltender Connor Ingram for future consideration. So basically, the Utah Mammoth gave Connor Ingram to the Edmonton Oilers. I like the bet. I know that Connor Ingram, he's had a tough few years. He was in the player assistance program. He lost his mother within the past year or so. A wonderful woman. I got to know the Ingram family when he was here. Just a wonderful family. Connor Ingram is a wonderful story. I like the gamble here. Again, it's future considerations. They didn't have to give anything up. But if Ingram can find his game again, I do think he improves the depth for the Oilers in goal, which, as you know, Willie, has always been an issue with the recent Oilers teams with Stuart Skinner and Calvin Pickard.
It's a very intriguing move by the Oilers, and I'm with you on Connor Ingram. He's a great guy. It's a great opportunity for him.
I think he's going to start in the American League. I think that's what the plan is.
Because I believe he cleared waivers, right? Mm-hmm. So that is a big part of this, is once he cleared waivers, they have the ability to put him in the AHL, because in listening to what Elliot Friedman and Kyle Bukauskas have said about this on 32 Thoughts, I think that you can make a case that Connor Ingram is an upgrade, at least on Pickard, their backup. But Pickard is a very, very popular guy in the locker room.
Had some solid playoff games over the past couple of years.
He's had some big wins. But And I think there's got to be some intrigue and some curiosity, if nothing else, from Oiler fans. It's like, what would it look like with somebody other than Skinner and Pickard in a big game? And Ingram has shown for stretches of seasons he can be really, really good. Remember the game he played for the Predators, his best game ever as
a
Predator.
In Colorado. Yep.
He played a whale of a game, too. Took him to overtime. He was awesome. So he can rise to a level there. So that is one to watch for sure. But it's a great move by the Oilers, and it doesn't cost them much. He's cleared waivers, and he can be an ace in the hole for them, if nothing else.
The Predators open the regular season a week from tomorrow against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Next Wednesday, we will provide for you the official Predators season preview show featuring Willie Donick, yours truly, and Max Herz. Andrew Burnett will join the program. Hal Gill will join the program. Pete Weber will join the program. That will be from 5 to 7 p.m. next Wednesday. So 2 hours of DVD. And 2 hours of hockey talk right here on 102.5 The Game. Until then, for Willie Donick, I'm Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game.